I've been in and out of the Crater Lake National Park for more than a year, and it's been a pretty amazing project for me because when the Brit Festival, which is located in Southern Oregon, about an hour and a half from Crater Lake National Park, when they called me and they said, we want to do this project at Crater Lake National Park and we want you to write a piece, I was like, I don't know what that is. And they immediately said, you've got to come and see it. So my introduction was pretty spectacular. Crater Lake is basically a volcano that blew up 8,000 years ago and then collapsed. And that's what a caldera is. And over the past, you know, thousands of years, it's filled with snow. So you're basically going up this volcano and you're two-thirds of the way up and then the volcano stops because the top has blown off and there's this rim which falls literally 1,000 to 2,000 feet and then you have this very pure water because there's no other source other than snowfall. It's the clearest, cleanest water in the country. And all around it, there are the signs of this incredibly violent destruction. I read that the explosion at Crater Lake was bigger than all of the world's nuclear arsenal going off at the same time. So you see that, and you see that in the rock, and you see that in the landscape. You see that, you know, in this very placid, very beautiful, very unusual color of blue, and this rock that's just jagged and rough and just falls away. So it's pretty amazingly spectacular. Well, I'm interested in places, and I've written music about cities, and I guess I'm an urban person, and so places have always meant something to me. I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to deal with all that nature. I'm into nature, but it just seems, well, what am I going to do? And my introduction to the area was, I met Teddy Abrams, who's the conductor of the Brit Festival Orchestra, and Craig Ackerman, who's the head superintendent of the park. We basically got a personal tour around the park. It was illuminating for a bunch of reasons, one of which is that Superintendent Ackerman, everything he saw and everything he talked about was in terms of 100,000 years or 500,000 years. And well, it's not a New York minute. We don't walk around and think that way, and all of a sudden I'm with someone who's looking at everything in terms of deep time. And so from that first visit, there were a bunch of things to think about. One of them was that this very, very violent explosion left this incredibly beautiful site that we interpret as being very meaningful. And, you know, the native people who lived there at the time and still live there now, it has a lot of meaning to them. And the European settlers came and they saw it and it had a lot of meaning to them. And today people come into the park and they look at this beautiful site and it has a lot of meaning to them. So out of this destructive, violent act that basically wiped out all the life for miles and miles around, there's this very beautiful thing and it's interpreted in different ways. And one of the things I did over the past year was try to look into how people think about wildness and wilderness and what it means to them and what it means to me. When I spoke with Teddy Abrams and he talked about the Brit Festival Orchestra, he said, well, you know, we're going to bring 40 musicians out here. And when you sit down and you think about it, 40 musicians is a lot of musicians. But the second you're outside and you feel the expanse of the area, you realize, we're going to be dwarfed here by the environment, by the beauty, by the mountains, by the rim, by the lake. And over the course of the 2 days that I was speaking with Teddy and other members of the Brit Festival, they started to say, well, we've got a chorus, there's Southern Oregon University, and maybe we could get some players from there. And there's a Native American group, the Klamath tribe that, you know, lives in Klamath Falls, and they come up here to sing and do ritual performances, and maybe we can make contact with them. And I just said, okay, great, yeah, let's do that. So eventually this became a project of about 150 musicians, including a drum group, the Steiger Butte Drum, from the Klamath tribe. And one of the things that happened when I went out there last summer is that the head superintendent said, you don't know this place unless you come back in winter, because it's only like this 2 months a year. And I went to Crater Lake in January, and I spent 10 days out in the park in a little house that rangers stay in, and there was no one there. And they had just had 12 feet of snow in December. And during that visit, I met with the drum group from the Klamath tribe. And to me, that was very fascinating. I mean, here are a group of people who have, you know, this basically was their land, and they've been there for 12,000 years. And I felt very emotional about meeting them. And I thought, well, how do I include them with the symphony orchestra, with the chorus, with this brass group, with this? And so it all became a big journey, putting all that together. When I met with them and I was learning how their music is structured and what they do, they sing, and it's a very sophisticated, very fast type of yodeling, very syncopated yodeling with this drum beat. And after a while, I asked them, well, how would you feel if there was an orchestra? How would you feel if there was a chorus? How would you feel just playing the drum? How would you feel just singing? These are things they had never done. They seemed very open and very receptive. And I went home and I thought about that. And I just thought, you know, I'm just going to put them in this texture. I mean, when I went home and I was trying to process all this, I just thought, we're by this lake, by this natural wonder, and there's sound going on all year long. In a certain sense, there's this symphony happening all the time for hundreds, for thousands of years. There's snow melts, trees fall, there's thunder, there are animals, there are wolves howling, there are frogs croaking, there are birds chirping. And we're going to come to the rim of this lake with all these musicians, and we're just going to join this symphony for half an hour and sing along, in a certain sense, with what's going on here all the time. And when we put it all together, I was nervous. Well, how's all this going to mesh? But the conductor, Teddy Abrams, was just a naturally charismatic and a natural facilitator. And I think he's, you know, 28 or 29 years old. I think he's just this very energetic young person. And, you know, I'm sitting around with this drum group and some of the elders of this tribe. And Teddy comes along and I said, okay, this is the boss. And he just made everything gel and put it all together. And a lot of what the orchestra is doing and the chorus is doing, it's pretty psychedelic and weird and strange. And it all kind of came together. Before the piece was played for the first time, the chairman of the Klamath tribe got up and made a little presentation and basically talked about how it was their land and had been their stomping grounds for generations. And there were a few little talks about that. And I wasn't prepared. I didn't know that was going to happen. So it was all interesting to me, you know, this juxtaposition of the European settler coming over, seeing this land and going, oh, we have to preserve it. And then here are the native people going, yeah, and this is still our land. I try to incorporate both those points of view in this piece. The point of view that was new to me was that I was able to spend some time with members of the drum group, and I was basically told, okay, we don't go to Crater Lake for recreation. This is a spiritual place. It's like going to a house of worship for us. So we go there to meditate or pray or gather healing. And the way we see it is, well, would you go to a house of worship and play Frisbee? Right. So that was an interesting point of view. And I tried to be very, very respectful of them in that process. So after the piece was over, the chairman of the Klamath tribe stood up and was shaking with emotion and said, and I wrote it down, I could almost envision the sounds of our ancestors reverberating through the ages. And that was, I was almost stunned. I don't think anyone, like, this just happened very spontaneously. So I almost didn't know how to feel, because you basically, as a composer, you sit in a room and you kind of imagine this stuff for months and months and months, and you're alone, and then all of a sudden you're with all these people and they have reactions and feelings. And in this case, people came up to me and said, oh, I could hear the animals, I could hear the sounds of the park, I could hear the original explosion. So, you know, I was moved afterwards by people's feelings and their thoughts about it, but it was very, very moving to feel that it somehow meant something to the Klamath people. When we're in a concert hall, we know what the experience is going to be. The musicians are on stage and the music comes at you. And here in this environment, I was able to place the musicians in different spots in order to take advantage of the environment, in order to focus. I was able to pick the spot where the concert was going to be. And the sound, you know, because I had all these musicians, I had 10 percussionists on a ridge overlooking the lake, and I had 20 brass players in a different location with the orchestra and the chorus and the drum group. So I wasn't prepared for how different the sound was. You know, the sound was almost like adding perspective to a painting, you know, and if you think of pre-Giotto, you know, where all the images are flat and then all of a sudden you see, oh, there's a little perspective, and the basically several hundred years it took painters to figure out that you could have depth. And I almost felt, well, being in a concert hall is very, very limiting, you know, and when you think, well, that's a much broader experience than how most people experience music, which is earbuds. There were 6 performances, but there was one at the rim of the lake, the very first one, and then there were 5 at a different location in the park, which was also a very beautiful location, and the audience just came and stood or sat wherever they wanted. And many of them came prepared with chairs or other devices, hammocks even. So people were all over the place. I mean, it was this huge chaotic sprawl. I think this has changed the way I'm thinking about space and has added some perspective, literally, to the sound world that I've been using. One of the things I did want to say was just that the National Park System, they commissioned a lot of art in association with this centennial. And in my exploration of American wildness and American wilderness, I discovered that there's a close relationship between artists and the preservation of wilderness. So I thought that was a very appropriate thing to do. It's not just, well, let's go to the park and hear a concert or have some art there. But a lot of the early conservationists relied on photographers and painters to show politicians how spectacular the landscape was. And the American view on wilderness differed radically from the European view of wilderness, you know, where in Europe almost everything is settled and the whole continent is almost completely covered with development. And I think the Europeans saw the wilderness and thought, oh, well, this is dangerous, this is bad, and we have to civilize it. The European settlers came here and they looked around and they said, oh, wilderness, that means something. We're inspired. There's beauty. We have to preserve it. And that was an amazing, amazing thing.